Chapter 20. Amanda. Amanda spent 2 hours with Naomi, going over Quinn's routine and the layout of the back of his house. Naomi had a plan, one that would work, one that Naomi had carefully choreographed by staking out Quinn's house, watching his movements.
"I don't have a gun either," said Naomi. "If you're going to kill someone bigger and stronger than you without a gun or poison, you need a weapon that will deliver massive damage. You need to take them by surprise."
That was hours ago. Amanda sat now in her car, parked 3 blocks away from Quinn's house. She drank some more coffee. It was 2 hours old and thoroughly chilled. She didn't care. She needed the caffeine hit. In fact, she needed a hit of something stronger than caffeine, but she knew she couldn't risk it. A Jack on the Rocks would help calm her nerves, but it might be her undoing. Instead, she lit a cigarette. The streetlights were on and no one was on the sidewalk. Too cold tonight. A fog shrouded the moon as if it was hiding behind a thin silk veil. Cars lined both sides of the streets for the next 4 blocks. She had already driven past the front of Quinn's home, a 3-story brick townhouse in one of the oldest parts of Greenwich Village. She had made the run twice, once to check out the house, see if lights were on and whether the neighbors were home. On that run, she saw drapes were drawn, dimming the lamp that burned inside Quinn's home. A low, warm light. He was probably watching TV. The second drive-by was to check for foot traffic. It was a quiet residential area, high-class real estate. However Quinn was paying for this place, it wasn't with a teacher's salary. Maybe he came from old New York money. As Amanda followed her route, around 10 miles per hour, she saw someone looking right at her. A man's face reflected in the side mirror of his car. He was parked on the right, sitting in the driver's seat of a dark-colored Chevy Escalade. She saw his face only for a second, reflected in some kind of internal light in the car, maybe a cell phone. She drove on, checked her rear view. The man watched her car move on up the street. The Escalade was parked around 50 feet from Quinn's front door, on the opposite side of the street. Amanda wasn't too concerned about the guy. Probably a neighbor checking his cell phone before he got out of the car and went home. Amanda wasn't going in the front anyway. She was just making sure there wasn't a cop car right outside the house. She drove 3 blocks before she found a parking space. It was 9:30, and Naomi would be at her support group. She had another half hour before Naomi was on the street again and her alibi useless. 30 minutes to kill a man. Amanda took another sip of coffee, threw the cigarette butt in the street, and thought about Wallace Crone. Naomi had taken him out, put him out of this world with a cold blade. Amanda was beyond the initial shock of this news. She had imagined this moment many times. There was an odd sense of peace, as if something had been given back to her. The world, struck from its course, was slowly righting itself. Once she'd gotten over the bombshell of Naomi's actions, she was thankful, truly thankful. She sat in the car, thinking of her girl, her husband, and for the first time in months, she felt hot tears on her cheeks. Her grief had been contained by a dam of hatred and fury, and now there was nothing to hold it back. She wiped her face and knew then that there was no way she could deny this to another person, especially not a mother. And a mother who had given her this very same release. There was a job to be done. She would do this one thing for Naomi. She would kill another monster, and then part of this nightmare would be over. But it wasn't just for Naomi. It was also for Naomi's daughter, just as Naomi had killed Crone for Jess and Louise. She looked at the picture of Frank Quinn from the news article she'd printed out. He was tall, but well-built all the same. Good-looking. Quinn looked physically powerful. She would need to be quick and pray the plan worked. Amanda put on a pair of gloves, got out of the car, closed the door and locked it. She headed south along the street for 3 blocks, then saw the alley on her right. Naomi's instructions were just hours old. They had gone over and over this. She remembered Naomi's plan word for word. "It's an old block. There's a gated alley, but the gate is never locked. You go in through the backyard. Quinn doesn't have a gun permit. He's not armed.
There are no dogs in the house, but two houses further up the street, there's a German shepherd. It mostly stays indoors. Approach from the south, and you'll be unlikely to set the dog barking. Naomi had scouted the property very well. She had planned this meticulously. All Amanda had to do was follow Naomi's instructions. There's no way to get to him from the front. You have to get over the backyard wall from the alley. The wall is 8 feet high. There's a dumpster on the corner that you can use to climb over it. Amanda saw the dumpster at the corner of the alley, just like Naomi said. She opened the lid. It was full of glass. If she moved it, it would make a lot of noise, like dragging a box of bells across rough concrete. She left it and found the gate to the alley unlocked, just as Naomi had said. Counting the houses from the rear, she moved north and stopped when she got to the rear of Quinn's house. Amanda put her shoulder blades against the wall opposite and ran at Quinn's backyard wall. She leapt, got her hands on top of it, dragged herself up, but banged her right knee hard against the brick. Scrambling, she crawled up on top and swung her legs over. Her boots hit the grass. She stayed low, watching the house. No lights on in any of the windows at the rear. Amanda pushed upwards into a crouch, but couldn't help a low moan as her knee clicked, sending a shockwave of pain through the joint. The right knee, same one that she'd banged against the wall. She looked at it now, saw her jeans had been ripped over the kneecap. It wouldn't take her weight at first. She thought it could collapse at any moment. Fuck. Tentatively, she took a step, testing the joint. The throbbing blazed when she tried to use it. There were two options now. Keep going, or haul herself back over the wall and call Naomi, tell her that something had gone wrong. The tool shed was just ahead of her. She thought for a moment. It could still work. Hobbling now, she reached the shed. It had an old padlock securing the slide bar in the locked position, just as Naomi had said. The lock on the tool shed is a single bolt, padlocked. The frame is rusted, the screws too. The wood is old. That tool shed has probably been there since the 70s. There's only a couple hundred coats of varnish holding the thing together. A screwdriver should deal with the bolt. The bar was set into the wood with 8 screws, all rusted. Amanda took the screwdriver from her pocket. She had brought the wrong type. A flathead would have been easier. She managed to work it between the bar and the wood and then pulled. The screws came out of the wood with a dry crack. The bar fell to the lawn, the sound dulled on the grass. The door opened outwards. The little side window for the shed was covered in cobwebs, but the work table was clean. Tools hung on nails, planks of wood were stacked on the floor. Even monsters have hobbies. Like I said, if you don't have a gun, you're gonna need something else, something heavy duty to take this guy out. He's big and very strong. A knife won't do it, not like Crone. Inside the tool shed, you'll see an axe. I saw it from the shed window. It'll still be there. Take it. That's what you use. One good swing is all you'll need. Amanda found the axe on the top shelf, lifted it down. You'll only get one chance at this. You have to make it count. If he's not down after that, then you get out of there because he'll kill you. If you do what I tell you, then you'll have all the time in the world to make that swing. Take these burner phones. Amanda took the first burner phone from her pocket, switched it on, and placed it on the worktop. Then left the tool shed with the door ajar. Now was the time. Up until this point, she could call it off, just walk away. In a few seconds, it would be too late. She hesitated, the axe heavy in her hands. But it wasn't just the axe that weighed her down. She was about to attack a man, a real person. She would be ending their life in a bloody, horrific murder. She stood there, motionless, frozen in place by her innate humanity. It takes a lot to kill someone. Human beings in crisis cannot think straight. Their instinct to preserve life gets sidelined in the sea of their desperation. In the absence of a psychological disorder or crisis, or the impairment to rational thinking brought about by drugs or alcohol, it is very hard to kill another living, breathing member of the human race. She knew all these things. She'd thought about them a lot. Amanda's dream came back to her.
The same one she had almost every night since she got out of the hospital. Adrift in a stormy sea, in a small boat. Luis and Jess beside the fire burning on the beach, guiding her home, yet impossible to reach. With Crone dead, Amanda felt those seas calming. There was one final storm to get through, and then she could step onto sand and enjoy that welcoming fire. She looked down at the axe. She had rationalized Crone's death many times. She'd come to believe that killing him was not an act of murder. It was an act of mercy. She was saving the lives of his future victims. Another parent wouldn't have to feel her pain, her loss. She told herself now that it was the same with Quinn. Amanda closed her eyes. She remembered that day on the subway, right before Crone had glanced up at her. She could smell the other people surrounding her in the carriage, their perfume, aftershave and sweat, and the faint odor of hot motor oil and grease that pervaded the subway. She could feel the vibration from the brakes beneath her feet, the sweat on her hands in those gloves, her fist wrapped round the butt of the gun. She saw herself, no longer in memory, but the fantasy of what could have happened, as she pulled the gun from her coat and pointed it at Crone's head and pulled the trigger, hearing the blast. Her eyes snapped open, the sound of her imaginary gunfire still in her ears. In Amanda's mind, she was not going to kill a man named Quinn who had raped and murdered a girl she had never met. No, Amanda was killing Crone tonight. She swung the axe at the kitchen window of the house, and it broke through with more noise than she'd been expecting. Glass exploded around her, but most of it fell into the house. Amanda took the axe and limped behind the tool shed, hunkered down and waited. She glanced up at the house when she saw a beam of light hit the lawn, the kitchen lights. She took out the second cell phone, another burner, switched it on. A voice in the dark, mumbling, indistinct, the crunch of boots on glass. Amanda held tightly to the axe, but she couldn't stop her hands shaking. The back door opened. Amanda took out the second burner phone, hit dial on the only pre-programmed number. She heard him coming closer, step by step. Amanda stood, her back to the shed, her knees screaming. The shed door whined open. Quinn must have seen the light from the burner phone in the tool shed and had come to investigate.
When he comes to the tool shed, he'll want to find out what the hell is going on. He'll see the phone ringing and he'll step toward it. You come around from the back of the tool shed and hit him from behind. Go for his neck or the back of his head. That's all it'll take. Be careful. You fuck up this part and you are in a lot of trouble.
Amanda whipped around the shed, the axe raised over her left shoulder. Quinn was ahead and to the right, standing in the doorway of the shed, gazing into it. Just as she turned around to the front of the shed, she saw his exposed back. He wore sweatpants, sneakers, and a tee. It was him, all right. The same man she'd seen in the photos, no doubt. He held a baseball bat in front of him. This was her chance. Back turned, wide open. She was going to kill the wolf. Amanda took a breath, held it. She gritted her teeth, tensed her muscles. Her grip tightened on the axe haft. One step forward, and she would be in range. One swing. Instead of Quinn's neck, she visualized Crone's. Imagined the sharp, heavy steel head biting into his flesh. Amanda took one step forward, hesitated. The axe trembled in her hands. Her whole body shook. She breathed out and let the axe fall by her side. She took a step back, emptied her lungs. This wasn't the man who'd killed her daughter, no matter how much she wanted him to be. This was a stranger, a life. She couldn't do it. Her heart wouldn't let her. Even though this man was a monster, she couldn't kill him in cold blood. Amanda blinked. Her mind had wandered in indecision. Her vision snapped back into reality. The man called Quinn had turned. He was still in the tool shed, his face in shadow. But now, she could see the light from the kitchen reflecting in his feral eyes, twin moons that blazed at her from the darkness.
"I'm sorry, I've made a mistake," said Amanda, stepping back, her left palm raised toward him.
He moved forward out of the dark shed. His voice was soft, yet it carried a sinister hiss.
You're damn right you made a mistake,
said Quinn, moving forward in step with Amanda's retreat. This man wasn't frightened of her. Amanda felt like someone who had stumbled through the jungle and suddenly came upon a jaguar. Quinn's eyes were so large and unnerving, they looked as though they had no lids. They didn't move. They were fixed upon Amanda. His mouth, large and wide, drew into a grin, exposing sharp, yellowed teeth. Amanda suddenly became hyper-aware of her surroundings. She was a long way from the back gate, and her knee was biting her painfully with every step.
Who sent you?
He asked. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I'll go, said Amanda.
You're not going anywhere,
he said. And at once, he was moving with tremendous speed toward her, the baseball bat curling in his right hand. Amanda hurled herself backwards as fast as she could, instinctively holding the axe in front of her. The baseball bat cracked into the axe haft, tearing it from her grasp as both bat and axe then cartwheeled through the night air. Amanda flinched at the impact. Before she could open her eyes, she felt her throat close and she was falling. She landed on her back, the lawn unforgiving. Quinn landed on top of her, both hands round her neck. Amanda couldn't breathe, couldn't move. He was so heavy, sitting on her chest. His eyes bulging, mouth cracked wide in violent delight, veins standing out on his muscular arms as he squeezed her throat.
Go to sleep now, he hissed. Go to sleep.